Now, our guest this evening is one of the biggest names in British radio, and we're going to spend the next 40 minutes or so with him trying to establish what makes him tick. 3 years after his sacking as the Breakfast Show presenter on Radio 1, Chris Moyles is back, and he's hosting the Breakfast Show on the all-new Radio X station. A little earlier this evening, he stopped into Five Live to talk to me. Look at you in front of a microphone again.
And we're not on now yet.
Yes, we are on now.
Are we?
Yes, we are.
Hello, listeners. Din, din, din. That guy, can I just ask a question? Hello, I'm Chris Moyles, by the way. Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Some of the voice people on Five Live, on Radio Five Live, right? Do you still have the din, din, din?
Yes, well, no doubt you listen to the station.
Yeah, I do. I'm a huge fan.
Right, well, don't start asking me what's on the station. You know what's on it.
But sometimes the voiceover guy sounds really bored. I'm really surprised at who's on the air.
It's called being serious.
Dun, 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 Five Live with Stephen Nolan.
This is the
not 100% sure.
This is the first time I've seen you, actually, this close beside a microphone.
Yeah, I guess, apart from in your studio in Northern Ireland.
How much of you? Well, you see, that was different then, because I didn't know you.
Yeah, true. We were friends.
I was in awe of you. I was a bit of a dork when I was interviewing you, because I was hyper, actually.
No.
When I look back on it, it's funny, but sure.
Well, good evening, Great Britain. This is BBC Radio 5 Live, the Stephen Nolan programme, and I am Chris Moyles, and Stephen is now going to interview me, which is going to be very odd because we are quite pally with each other. We are friends.
Except he doesn't take some of my calls. It's
wild. Oh!
It's really bad, actually.
Mr. Kettle.
He really does.
You are dreadful.
He plays the superstar. I try to get in touch. He just doesn't take the calls. It's awful.
Don't listen to him.
Right.
So, let's chat.
Seriously, what is it like?
Friday night across the UK.
What's it like to be back in front of that microphone? Seriously.
This one?
Yes.
It's nice. I like it. I took 3 years off radio, and being back is really lovely. It's really enjoyable. And I didn't really miss it when I was away. And now
I don't believe you.
I missed elements of it, but genuinely I didn't miss it enough to want to go back to just anything. I thought, you know what, I'm going to have a break and I will go back at some point when the right thing comes along. And this genuinely feels like the right thing.
So that's different, isn't it? That's nearly a political answer in that, because you didn't want to go back.
It's a genuine answer.
Yeah, fine. You didn't want to go back until it was the right thing. Doesn't mean you didn't miss it. And the, you know...
Hang on a second. I didn't miss it enough that I would just take anything to
sure,
go back.
I get that.
And if I was going to go back, it was going to be, I wanted it to be big.
Sure, I get that.
So, but in the meantime, I had an argument with Hursty, with our mutual friend Stephanie Hurst, and she goes, liar, yeah. And I'm like, you've got to remember, I did it. All I wanted to do since I was a kid was be on the radio, and I was very lucky that that's what I've done, from the age of 16 to the age of 38.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about radio is, even though there are elements of what your job that puts you in the limelight and celebrity and you're a bit famous, you essentially have a Monday to Friday job. It's just that instead of being in an office, you're in a studio. So it's not like you're an actor and you do a project for 3 months and then take a couple of months off. You are working Monday to Friday, week in, week out. So there is, you get holiday like everyone else. With a little bit, you get probably maybe get a little bit more holiday than your average office worker. So I'd never had a month off, ever. Now, I know that most people listening haven't had, and they're probably going, oh, poor you. But in that world that we supposedly live in, so I wanted to take a break, and I did, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So I get all of that.
Right.
I've been doing this for quite a long time, 20-odd years, whatever. It becomes part of your life. It becomes part of who you are.
Yeah.
You have to put yourself into it. So I'm guessing that the break is great for a month or two. And maybe when it gets to a year and a half, you start thinking, what else am I going to do? Did that happen?
It's like anything. It's like going on holiday. If you go away for like a long weekend, you're not away long enough to relax. It takes you a couple of days to get into a holiday.
Yeah.
If you're lucky enough to you can get 10 days away or a 2 week holiday, you know, that's a good holiday, because after 3 or 4 days now you relax, now you're off, your work head's off and you can relax. And it was like that with my time off. And the year went so quick that I felt cheated at the end of it and thought, well, I don't need to go back to anything. I'm gonna carry on.
Could you have afforded to never work again?
No.
Right. So there was a pressure that most people have too. Work again.
No, I'll be honest, it wasn't pressure. You know, I've been very lucky. I've worked ever since I was a kid, since I was 15. I've been paid for work in a job that can pay well, but traditionally doesn't, I was at the top of my class in what I did. You know, I did very, very well. I worked hard for it. And I don't have a very lavish lifestyle. I'm not married. I don't have children. And I don't do a lot. You and I are very similar. Holidays, we'll spend a bit of money on the holiday.
Yeah.
That's the break. But Monday to Friday, Monday to Monday, week in, week out, I don't have a lavish life. So, you know, I saved enough money that I could. And also in this industry as well, and this is very difficult to talk about without sounding like an idiot, but in this industry that I'm in, I left Radio 1 and went straight into a musical for Andrew Lloyd Webber. And I toured that for 6 months.
I went to see that.
You did. And thank you very much. And it paid well.
Yeah.
And then they had a DVD of it. Then I did my own tour. And then I released an album. And that money from that alone was fine to keep me, for the next year or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, but
so I was very, very lucky.
But you see, was that about money? Or was that about just a slight fear of leaving a space of doing nothing? So you're right. You did put yourself in the other stuff. So you didn't sit in the house doing nothing. You were in a musical. You were releasing DVDs.
That was for the first few months after Radio 1.
Yeah.
So I left Radio 1 in September, and then by Christmas, all those projects had finished.
And then what?
Then I wanted to write. Yeah. I've always wanted to write. Never had the time to write. So I thought, I'm going to take a year off, and one of the things I'm going to do is write. And that's what I did. And I went and spent a bit of time in America, in LA. I have friends there. And I would go and spend a month or so there and then come back for a few months and do some writing. And I started training and really looking after myself and just enjoying my life. And what I got out of it, which was never, ever, ever the plan, was because it was genuinely just to take a break and get off the grid a little bit and concentrate, put some time into my life, the training and the writing, which sounds silly, but it's true. But what I got from it was a retrospective view of my life over the couple of years that I was off.
Because you had always planned, Chris, to do 10 years at Radio 1, right?
10 years in the breakfast show, yeah.
Yeah.
Then leave.
And you're a guy that likes to get your own way. And Ben...
To an extent, yeah.
And Ben...
Ben,
who was the boss, he cut that short by about a year.
Yeah.
And I knew that story.
Yeah.
What I didn't know until I was reading for this today was that Ben used to be your producer, used to be a mate, correct?
He produced us on the early morning show at Radio 1. He wasn't my first producer, but I think he was my second. And he was the producer when we did the early morning show, and then we went to the afternoon show on Radio 1 for 5 years, and he produced us for the first three of the afternoon.
So what's it like, a mate that used to be your producer, getting rid of you?
That didn't come into it because as much as we were pally, he's the boss. So that was fine. You know, you kind of, you know each other well enough that you're relaxed around each other, but you still have to have that mutual respect for the other one. And that was fairly easy.
How did he set?
We had a meeting. They were trying to get a meeting with me for ages. And I was filming some TV show at the time and doing a lot of the stuff outside of the show. So I was literally out the door every morning at 10 past 10 after the radio show. And they were trying to get an interview, a meeting. And my agent at the time was like, well, I'll come and see you. We'll have the chat. Oh, you could really do with Chris being there. So eventually we went in for literally a 5 minute meeting. And the idea was, look, if you get that desperate, we can do a 5 minute meeting, but Chris has to leave because he's filming. He's got to leave and be in a car and go to wherever he's doing. And we went in, me and my agent, and Ben sits down and goes, well, this is going to be very difficult. And I knew immediately from the look on his face and what he said that I thought he was going to say, we need to have a conversation about wrapping up on the breakfast show. So 5 minutes just to say, we need to get a proper meeting in the book to talk about how we're going to dismantle the show and move on.
Two other things in the station. That's what you thought.
Well, no, I thought the initial 5 minute meeting was to go, look, I need 5 minutes with you to say, it's time that we look at bringing the show to a close. So let's meet next week and talk about how we're going to do that. And he didn't. He just goes, I'm going to take you off. And we're going to announce it now. And my agent at the time went crazy. And then those two.
What does that mean, crazy? So what? Did, what would your agent
she,
say?
Well, because she didn't know, and it's kind of not how that it doesn't really work like that in the industry.
Was she
know?
Screaming at him? Was she shouting? At him?
She didn't scream.
What's crazy?
She goes, Ben, you can't do this, and he goes, well, and we need to announce it now. So it's now about 10:15. They want to announce it in the news at 10:30.
No.
Yeah, and I go, I said, well, hang on a second, Ben, and she goes, you can't do this, and he goes. Well, I can because I can't trust this is not going to leak out and blah, blah, blah. She goes, well, why would we leak out? That's not good for us. And this, and then those two kind of started. And I'm sitting there going, this is very weird. Because Radio 1's a conveyor belt. At some point, you will drop off the other end. You either jump off or you drop off. And this was, in fairness, I'm going, look, it's been great, but we got to move on. So these two are kind of at each other, you know, not like cat and dog, but they're getting stuck into each other. And I go, guys...
I've left my phone on.
That's terrible. I hope that's someone calling in to say how much they're enjoying. That's my old agent.
I'm sorry, it's very unprofessional.
It's fine.
It's like something you would do.
You can edit it out.
Yeah. There's none of this being edited.
So those two are at each other's throat like cat and dog. And I just calmly went, guys, the pair of you, stop it. Sit down. Stop. You sit down. You stop. I'll deal with this. Ben, what are you saying? What are you thinking? Because I'm thinking... You can't announce this at 10:30. I'll announce this. You can't announce this. I should have earned that right. And I've been at Radio 1 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, proper, you know, boy to man or boy to slightly older boy scenario. And it went on for a long time. I'm not going to give the whole story of it because A, it's a very long story, and B, a certain amount of stuff should stay. You know, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus because things I say will get quoted and taken out of context and whatnot. This is fine, this interview of you and me talking, but, you know, things will get picked up. But it was farcical. And we fixed it. But here's the greatest thing. I didn't know, but they'd called everybody else from the radio show into the boardroom for a chat. And they thought the chat with me would take 5 minutes. It didn't. It took 45 minutes before the event. I said, look, I've got to speak to the team. There's a lot of people work on the show. I've got to tell them what's going on. They need to know. It's only right, you know, because they might need to look. I don't know what your plans are for these people because they're all staff. None of them work for me. I need to know that these people are looked after and they're cool. And I don't even know where they are. I've got to go and call them. And they're like, oh no, they're all next door. And they've been sitting in the boardroom waiting. It was so ridiculous. But the weirdest thing is, Dave Vitti used to work with us on the show. As he was going up the stairs to the boardroom, he bumps into Nick Grimshaw and goes, hello, Nick, what are you doing in here? And he goes, they've called me in for a meeting, but I don't know why.
Yeah,
and he goes, well, I think I can guess.
Yeah.
So it was all a little bit panto and a little bit crazy, but we sorted it all out and it was fine. And Radio 1 were very gracious. They let me do... say goodbye for a few weeks.
So I interviewed Paul Gambaccini last week.
Right.
Paul's been through the court case, innocent man, all that kind of stuff. But Paul said during the interview that one of the biggest disappointments to him was the BBC when he was in trouble because he had spent decades in the BBC.
Right.
And he didn't feel senior managers stood by him. Which leads me to my question to you, that when you've been in Radio 1 for that length of time and they essentially want to give you 15 minutes notice before an announcement,
yeah,
was that disloyal?
It was disappointing. And as it turned out, the way we worked it out was we came to an agreement, it was all fine.
Yeah, but that's a lightweight answer.
It's an honest answer.
How do you feel about the BBC doing that to you?
Okay, so to answer that, I need to give you another conversation that I had once. Andy Parfitt was the controller of Radio 1 for a long time. And he said to me once, do you feel valued by the BBC? And I said, no. And he looked quite surprised. We were having a drink. We were, you know, a social drink one night. I said, I feel very valued by Radio 1, but do I feel valued by the BBC? I don't know who the BBC is. You know, I worked for a big department of a huge company, is the way I looked at it. And in our building, because Radio 1 was in a separate building, that was fine. But as far as the BBC goes, Radio 5 Live is a huge radio station. It is one big department of a ridiculously sized company. So there are people at the BBC, big managerial people that I never met. So, and that's just the way it was.
But there's a human part. I'm going to move on from this, but
my answer boring?
No.
All right. Not what you wanted?
No, it was exactly what I wanted.
When do we play records on the show, by the way?
But you see, there's an interesting power dynamic there in that you've got you, their star, the guy that was doing the business for them that they couldn't get anybody else to do because you were doing the business no matter what they did or didn't think about you, right? And then all of a sudden, the click of a finger, they decide it's over. Now, I'm guessing that actually there were signs in the year up to that that they were probably hassling you or niggling or all of that kind of stuff. And then you start to lose a bit of your power as a star. And how do you handle that as Chris Moyles?
I was very aware that the BBC Trust wanted, they seemed obsessed with getting the average age of the Radio 1 listener down. They said it was too high and they were obsessed with getting that age younger. And we all talked about it. And I talked to Ben, who's about it, and Andy. And then when Andy left, Ben took over the job and we talked about it a lot. It wasn't working. And I had views why it wasn't working and also why actually it was an irrelevant thing to even worry about. But they'd started this ball rolling now. So at some point, Ben, as the boss, had to do something to say, look, I am doing the best that I can. And the biggest move he could have made would be to take me off the breakfast show and put a younger guy in and go, ta-da. And that's what he did. So
he was the right move?
For them? It's all irrelevant.
Okay.
Because Radio 1, people grow up listening to it and they don't want to leave. Going to Radio 2, for a lot of people, not everyone, is an admission that you're old. I listened to Radio 1 when I was younger. I'm now at that age. I need to listen to Radio 2. And for many people, they don't want to make that switch. So it's a unique radio station where you're broadcasting to a target of younger people, but you will have a lot of older demographic listening. And that was always the case. That's always been like that. It will be very difficult to change it without hemorrhaging listeners. So for me, it was a pointless task. And I would have said to the BBC Trust, it's irrelevant. Don't worry about it. Trust us. We are doing our job. If this was any other company in the world, they'd all be getting pay rises. If this was a new brand of cola drink, we're bringing back cherry cola. And we're aiming it at 15 to 24 females. And 15 to 24 females bought it. But so did 25 to 34-year-old males and 35 to 44-year-old females. They go, well, that's a bonus. But as long as you're still hitting your target, well done, great, well done. And Radio 1, no matter what you think of Radio 1, it's always hit that demographic of the youth audience. Even we did. We had loads of teenagers listening to us, far more than has been reported. But they had the older thing.
What do you think of the new guy?
Of what's new guy?
What do you call him? The breakfast host. I don't even know.
That's brilliant.
Who?
Who's
the guy on Radio 1?
Oh, Nick.
Nick.
Yeah. It's hardly the new guy. He's been doing it for 3 years.
What do you think of him?
On the radio or in real life?
And on the radio.
He's great.
Do you really mean that?
Yeah, I really do. He doesn't do what I do.
Is he as good as you?
He's different to me. He's different to me. Am I as good as you? I'm different.
Better than me.
I'm different to you. I'm different. You can do what I can't do.
So we have a lot more Chris Moyles coming up tonight. Only 30 minutes of Chris Moyles, 20-odd minutes, 25 minutes of Chris Moyles coming up after the news. It's 11:32. On digital, online. Okay, thank you very much. Back to our Chris Moyles interview tonight. Here's what he told me about life and what it was like after losing his job at Radio 1.
It was like very long therapy. And I didn't mean for my time off to be that, but you kind of look back at you know, everything that I've done. I achieved my dream job. Yeah. I wanted to be the Radio 1 breakfast show presenter. I know that's crazy. Some people want to be astronauts and firemen and rock stars. I wanted to be a disc jockey on Radio 1 on in the morning. And I got it. And it's the biggest breakfast show Radio 1 arguably ever had. It's the longest serving show. And realistically, it's a record that will never be broken because I don't think anybody will be allowed to do an 8-year breakfast show on Radio 1. So I achieved it. And you know, with anything, with any job.
Did it come at a price, Chris?
I don't think so.
Okay, so why am I hinting at it? When you get that successful and you're King Dick, do you lose the run of yourself at all? Like, did you get wrapped up in the showbiz world, all of that kind of stuff? Because your persona on air sometimes was you were having a go with people, all this kind of stuff. You had a go with me.
Yeah.
But the good thing is I got to know you, and you are genuinely a good guy.
But when I was taking the mickey out of you, that's what I think it is. I don't know what phrase works for you. I was busting your balls. I was ribbing you, whatever.
You were giving me a huge profile.
I was taking the mickey out of you.
Yeah.
And when you're on national radio and you're talking about somebody who's on in Northern Ireland and a big name in Northern Ireland, but not necessarily at the time, would you be known in Ipswich? Right?
Yeah.
So it's a big thing, and the people in Northern Ireland go, oh, he's been talking about Nolan and da-da. So there's a lot of that gameplay goes on. And I genuinely, there were people that I did rant about, don't get me wrong, and there are days when you're in a bad mood. You know, you're not always in a great mood. So
who did you rant about who you genuinely didn't like?
Off the top of my head, I've no idea. We ranted a lot about... Oh, no, I didn't rant a lot about... We took the mickey out of Johnny Vaughan a lot.
Do you not like him?
I'd never met him. I've not met him. I'd never met him until literally a couple of weeks ago. And that was the funniest thing. So there was a feud, but we'd never met each other.
Okay.
And all it was is literally... It was a gladiator thing. He came into the radio arena... He came into my arena and he'd made comments about me before. And I've never talked to Johnny about this, and we need to have this discussion because it now, looking back, like all feuds, it's quite funny. He'd made some comments about me only being a disc jockey. You know, he's not talent, he's just a disc jockey. And I'm like, that's a little bit out of order. Throw forward a few years later, he's now going to go head to head with me on the radio in London. And I'm like, now you'll see. I ain't going to let you go. I'm going to chew you up and spit you out because this is my castle and I'm king of it and you ain't coming in. Now, I don't care. The real me doesn't care.
No, hold on a second. Yes, you do care.
In the radio.
Listen to that ruthless determination.
But that's to
be a winner, which is why you are a winner.
But I don't go home and think about it.
You care. Yeah, you do. Clear off.
Depending on what it is, clear off.
Yeah.
What, now?
No.
Right.
Clear off means stop talking nonsense.
Oh, right, okay.
All right? You've got to go home. If you're as determined as you are and you made it like you did, you go home and you think about it and you stress about it.
But it never made me... I didn't stress about it.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't stress about it. And again, it's just... Even though I'm going to show him. I'm going to show him. It's still a lot of bravado and it's still ribbon. It's still...
What were you like? What was it like when you really met him then? Was it cordial?
Weirdly, it was fine. Well, he shook my... We got introduced to each other and he didn't really know who was being introduced to because he was kind of talking to someone. Johnny, have you met Chris? He goes, what's that? Put his hand out. And I go...
Brilliant.
Hi, Johnny. And give me your hand. And he literally went like this. Give me your hand.
All right, okay.
And he literally went, oh. And turned away.
Really?
But then 30 seconds later, we were all chatting. We're all doing a photo shoot. And he was chatting away and he was fine. And there was absolutely... It was so not uncomfortable.
But the handshake was cold.
Weirdly, from what I'm learning about Johnny, I don't think there was anything in it.
Okay.
You know those situations where you're in and you think it should be more uncomfortable than it is, but it's not. And therefore, you're feeling uncomfortable.
Do you know what? I actually don't care about Johnny Vaughan, right? What I care about is getting back to the question of when you had time to look at yourself.
One of the things I realised was I got very much into a routine. I got very much caught up in stuff. And when you're doing any job, you know, some days are better than others. You know, that week, 2 weeks before you go on holiday and you're like, that holiday can't come fast enough. And I loved my job. I really did. But I've got a big... framed picture in my home, which it says, work hard and be nice to people. And I worked hard and I don't think I was necessarily horrible to people. I really wasn't. You know, this is not like me. It's not like Chris Evans when he talks about how horrible he used to be and now he's on this epiphany and he's a nice guy. I don't genuinely believe I have been horrible to people like we all have, but I don't think I was a horrible person to work with. But I just thought, you know what, I could have been a bit nicer. And if I go back, I'm just going to be a bit nicer.
In what way?
In a way that I get embarrassed very easily in real life. And when you're one thing on the radio and then you can't be that all the time in real life. And people kind of expect you to be. And I often didn't know who they wanted me to be. So I'm quite socially uncomfortable. So I just want to kind of get out and people go, hi, nice to meet you. I go, hi, thanks very much. And I kind of go away. So, and I just thought, you know what? It's a bit pathetic and just be a bit nicer. And in this new job that I'm now in, I'm bouncing around the building saying hello to everybody and it's nice. I really like it.
You see, I liked you on air. I thought you were brilliant on air, right? But the best compliment I can give you is that I don't think you were as good on air as you are a person. Because when you talk to me on the phone,
yeah,
all right, I actually think you're a caring guy. And I think that's very important. I actually do think that's very important. I think you're a nice guy, a nice bloke, right? And that's one of the most important things to me, certainly about, you know, people that I want to talk to and see. But do you want to be better at that? Like, is that it? Is that, as you get older, is that kind of, or is it just still about being number one? So you've got the new Radio X show, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to go back to the most important thing in your life as being the most successful broadcaster, and that's it. Nothing changes.
I'm ambitious. If I'm on the radio, I want to have the best show. Yeah, and I don't think that's a bad thing. You know,
if it can eat you up if you don't control it.
Yeah, it can. And you know, and also, I'm not excusing myself, but I started at Radio 1 when I was 23. And against all the odds, I ended up going from the 4 o'clock in the morning show to the 4 o'clock in the afternoon show, which is arguably the second best show on the network, and 5.5 years of the afternoon show. And then I got on the number one slot. So you've got to jostle for that.
Yep.
It doesn't fall into your lap. You've got to graft for it. You've got to work for it. You've got to look over your shoulder. And I always said, you've got to work harder to keep it than you did to get it, because everybody else wants it. And like any industry, it's quite cutthroat at times. So I don't think, and also, you know, I always thought on the radio, you know, bar the ranting and raving and that I would occasionally do, I thought if you listen to the show long enough, you would know that I am a nice guy.
Yeah, and I get that.
And so I don't, the media perception of me, especially in things like the Daily Mail and stuff back in the day, I wish my show was as outrageous and edgy as people thought it was. You know, there were days when I'd finish the show and go, we were a bit rubbish today, weren't we? We're a bit tired, it's Tuesday, you know, we peaked too soon yesterday and all that. And I'd be reading about how outrageous and dangerous and edgy and how can he say all these things? And I'm like, oh, I didn't say anything yesterday. I was a little bit weak, to be honest. So, you know, but now, I'm not 23, I'm 41.
So what has changed about Chris Moyles at 41 than Chris Moyles 5, 10 years ago? That's what I'm trying to get to. What's changed?
I tell you what I did notice, and I don't know whether this is a real thing or just in my head. You know, sometimes you think a thing and you go, oh, that's clever. And you don't know if it's actually real or you're just liking it because it's clever. I realised I was really happy. I was sitting at home one day and I'm really happy, doing nothing, right? And I'm not on the radio anymore, which means I don't need to think about things to talk about, because subliminally you're always thinking. And when I watch TV now, I watch TV and I enjoy it. When I was on the radio, I'd be subliminally waiting for a newsreader to fluff, for the guy on Dragon's Den to get nervous and get shouted down by Duncan Manitou, or whatever, so I could play the audio on the radio and goof about it. So in a sense, I spent a lot of my time subconsciously looking for the negative in many things.
And I get that.
And when I stopped in the radio, I wasn't doing that. And one of the things I started writing, when I started writing a comedy, a sitcom. And again, subliminally, all of a sudden I'm seeing funny scenarios and they're registering in my head, bing, and I'm like, oh, that's clever. I must remember that. And they write that down. So I was doing the opposite. And I think in a weird way, that kind of made me happier and less angry. Not that I was angry per se, but less ranty and less negative. So that was one thing which I thought was interesting. Again, it might be nonsense, but
well, what about love?
I love you. I mean, I don't know what you're...
What about someone that you want to be with, Chris, and all that? Has there been space and time to do that? Is that different?
I was on the radio for a few hours a day. It's not like I was away on an oil rig.
You've just given me a whole story of, you could just give Radio 1 5 minutes of a meeting because you were so busy. Right.
I was busy, but it's right. How many people listen to this? Have busy. Everyone's busy, you know. It's work. You've got your work, and I'm lucky. I don't have a wife and children, so I go home.
Want one? Do you want a wife and kids?
Do you have a competition in the next hour? What is this?
Really? Well, do you? Come on, you're 40 no, old. Do you want a wife and kids?
No.
Do you want that kind of traditional setup? Is that the real man you are?
No. I'm not saying I wouldn't be happy in it, but I don't crave it. I don't feel the need to have children and be married.
Right. So that's interesting in itself.
And that's honestly true.
Okay. Tell me, because most people do. It's not a judgment call,
right?
But most people do.
I'm aware of that.
Why do you not want kids?
I think any answer I give now, all my thoughts in my head, will sound so pathetic to anyone listening who does have children.
Well, just say it from the gut.
I'm going to stop interrupting.
Sorry.
I'm very selfish. I like my life. I'm a kid at heart. I can't believe I'm 41 years old because I've matured not much in the last, 10 years. I still think I'm pretty much the same. I've got a little bit better. And I like my life being all about me. I've been single for a long time. And so you get very self-sufficient and selfish. And there's nothing wrong with that because I think you should be like that in that scenario. And the thought of, I believe that if to have that family thing and the children and that situation, that I need to stop my life as it is and it needs to change. And I don't want it to change. And it's as simple as that. And I don't feel the need to... I just don't have... My brother's got two beautiful children. I've got two beautiful nephews. And they're adorable and I don't see enough of them. And they're lovely and they're great and everything. But I don't need to be up in the morning when they get up. And I don't need to put up with the screaming and the crying and the changing of the... smelly nappies, and that's that. It's I'm sadly that idiot that comes in and is silly Uncle Chris and lots of fun, and then happily hands them back to mum and dad and goes, "See you next week."
So, what is important to you in life then? If it's not about having kids,
my family is important. My friends and family are terribly important. My privacy is hugely important to me.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, hugely. But I think you and I are very similar. My argument is this, and no one cares about this argument but me, and I wonder if you're the same, because we never talked about this. I give enough of myself on the radio. I am as honest as I can be on the radio. When I do my show, I try to be really honest. And I talk about a lot, and over the last 20 years of being on the radio, I have talked about a lot of my life. So what I choose not to talk about, I think I've earned the right to keep that to myself.
Well, that's a warning shot to a guy sitting opposite you, interviewing you, isn't it?
No, but do you not...
I don't know what to not ask you now.
But do you, but
well
do you,
done.
But do you
never.
Not feel the same?
Absolutely.
You know, you're on the radio 7 days a week.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as much as sometimes you are... you know, playing devil's advocate between, home and away or whoever it may be, the argument, you give a lot of yourself for the radio. I know what your mother's called. You know, I know a lot about your life. I know what you eat. I know when you're feeling good about yourself, when you're feeling bad about yourself, it all comes out. So the stuff that I don't know about, that's down to you to tell me. And I think that's the right with any human being.
Being the big star that you are, the national star that you are in this country, you know...
Which I don't necessarily... I can't take what you just said seriously.
Clear off.
it's very weird.
So this is the man that described himself as the saviour of Radio 1, recently described himself as the possible saviour of digital radio, telling me he doesn't believe he's a national star.
That's just
clear.
That's the job.
So you don't believe it?
No, I don't go home and put on my, my halo and my saviour wings and float around the kitchen.
Yeah.
It's a job and I love my job. I love it.
What I was going to say was, when you are as big as you are, with the profile you have, expecting privacy from the British press is fair, is decent, but you're not going to get it from someone, right? So that must irritate.
Yeah.
Do they chase you down the street?
I have a weird fame where I'm predominantly on the radio, but people seem to know what I look like. And when I lost a lot of weight, when I was off, it was brilliant because I could literally go for a drink in the pub around the corner from where I live and the pub that, there's always a pub you don't go to as much, that one, your least favourite. And I would go in there and nobody would recognise me and it was great. I don't get chased down the street per se. The paparazzi every so often decide to go on you for whatever reason. They see you with a girl and go, right, let's follow him for a few days until they find out that the girl is, you know, your cousin or, you know, your assistant or whatever, or you know, a friend, and then they kind of go away. So it's not really, I like when I'm off, when I switch off, I like to be off. And I like it to be a switch. When the switch is on, it's great. When it's off, it's off.
Well, you're switching the switch on now again, aren't you, with Radio X?
Yeah, for the job, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy. It's great. And I love being back. I really love being back.
Why that station? Why now? Why is it right?
So a couple of years off the radio, and I'd spoken to many people.
Who offered you jobs that you turned down?
Commercial radio and BBC. Had
which station?
Both came to me for it. Do you think it's fair to say?
Do you?
I don't want to throw anybody under the bus.
Okay.
If you push me on it, I will answer it.
Who offered you work? Who you turned down?
Five Live.
Who else?
Five Live offered me an amazing gig.
Okay.
At the weekends, doing a late night show, 10 o'clock. And then I was just about to sign, and then they said, oh, and we want you to be on after question time. And I said, listen, you're joking, you're dreaming.
Brilliant. At least you would have been cheaper than me.
I would have been cheaper than you. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. So why Radio X? And did you play hardball?
So Richard Park, who I used to work for back in the day, kind of calls me and says, let's have a cup of tea. And I'd had a cup of tea with you know, many radio people. And he said, would you ever think about coming back? And I went, if it was the right thing. And he goes, well, we'd love to have you back. We want to rebrand the station. And I'm like, okay, well, let me have a think. And then I called him back and said, look, let's cut the rubbish. What do you want? And he said what he wanted. And I went, this is me doing what I do, bringing in my team, carte blanche to do what I want. Yes.
That's hardball.
You know what I do. I've done it for long enough. Do you want to buy that? And he said, yes. And that's what you're buying. Yes. Don't be telling me how many songs an hour to play. Don't be telling me this stuff. You want me to come in and do what I do and get the figures up and you make loads of money. Great. Okay, fine. Well, talk to my manager and let's realistically see where we end up. And we ended up with the contract and away we go.
So you wouldn't have done it unless it was absolutely your way.
And absolutely my way. Let's be honest. I have bosses. So it's not my radio station. I have bosses. There are rules that you have to abide by, Ofcom and the law and whatnot. And there's adverts that need to be played because it's a commercial station and all that. Yeah, all that. But what I do with the rest of it is down to me. Yes. Okay. Fine. then I'm interested. Let's talk. And it's 2 weeks in. It's going great.
So does that mean that you have chosen not to employ Comedy Dave?
No, I. No, but hang on. First of all, I'm not employing anybody. I don't pay...
On your team, yeah.
Right,
on my team. Bring into your team. Did that mean that... Because obviously you brought some of the regulars in,
yeah.
But Dave isn't there.
Dave's not there. Alad is not there. Tina is not there. If you've never heard my show before, these are names which mean nothing to you. I appreciate that. Rachel's not there. I brought in Dominic to do the news. I brought in Pippa, who did work with us before on and off. I brought her back to be showrunner, exec producer, and run the show. And then we brought in another guy who already works at the radio station. I wanted one other person, and I couldn't get them, and I was really disappointed. And rather than replace that person, I just thought, let's just leave it as it is and let the show evolve. But the one person that I wanted was in my head from the day I left Radio 1, and I couldn't get them out. That was a shame.
Who?
I wanted to hire my cousin, Susie, who works on the radio in Dublin.
Okay.
Because I thought Dave's got his own production company. And so I needed a different dynamic to the dynamic that I had with Dave.
And did he turn you down or did you not ask?
He has his own company. He's running his own production company.
Sure.
You can't do both.
You said you want to do 10 years on the Radio 1 breakfast show.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you reckon you'll last on Radio X?
I've signed a 3-year contract and I'm hedging my bets on having that contract extended, but equally being fired before the 3 years arrives. And I don't know which. I'm going 50-50 at the moment.
You're not serious?
I'm 100% serious.
Would you not care about getting fired? What do you mean?
Well, no. Because The company I'm working for are not used to this. It's very safe. It's heart. It's capital. They own Classic FM, right?
I love
for
Classic
heaven's
FM.
Sake. Yes, but Classic FM is what it is.
Yeah,
I ain't Classic FM.
Right. So have you done? Can you give me a sense? Just because we're coming to the end. Can you give me a sense?
And thank God, by the way, because I'm bored of myself.
Have there been any clashes? Have you scared them?
No.
Have you scared? Have they said, "Oh, this is"?
No. And this is the scary thing. Okay. They're very happy.
So you're going to keep on up on the ante then.
The bosses are very happy and very animated, and as you know, that's like. Could be very dangerous. That's more dangerous than being told off every day.
So a 50-50 bet, you reckon?
This is me.
Or whether you'll get fired.
Yeah. You know, and I'm being honest. And if I get, you know, I don't want to be fired. You've got to remember as well, I did 15 years at Radio 1 and we were never, I was never suspended, ever. You know, we had a few Ofcom complaints, but we were never fined by the regulatory board.
Yep.
So actually, I'm actually secretly quite a good boy. I did this thing once when we went up against Wogan, Say No to Wogan, because we wanted to beat him in the ratings. And we got told to stop doing it.
By the BBC?
Yeah. And I don't know where it came from. And I remember seeing Wogan at some event and he couldn't care less. Oh, Say No to Wogan. Oh, very nice. I got a sticker and all that. And that's the worst impression I've ever done. But the thing is, the one thing that no one realised at Radio 1 or Radio 2 was, here I was literally plugging Wogan, right? Now, no matter which way you look at it, I was bigging him up every day. And Radio 1 and Radio 2, we had like 8 million listeners, he had 9 million listeners. We had 17 million listeners between us, between the two of us. And all I was doing was plugging the pair of us every day. I thought that was very clever marketing and I should have been at least given a hamper or something.
It's good to see you back.
Thank you. What's on the rest of the show?
Okay, I have no idea.
Brilliant. Is Charlie Wolf on doing the papers?
Not tonight.
Okay.
Continued success.
Thank you.
You were missed.
Thank you.
You're a genuinely nice guy. You deserve success.
Can I say this? I hope you continue with it. You're very sweet. Can I say this before
I go?
I
mean that.
And I know you do. And I want to say the same back. I think... as a radio guy, and I'm a big radio fan, you are such a superb broadcaster. And I love listening to you when I go to bed, which sounds wrong, but you know what I mean. But I also listen to your Radio Ulster show, and I listen in my kitchen in London to your show in Belfast, and it's brilliant. And I'm telling you, if you've heard Stephen Five Live, you've heard nothing yet. When he does a Radio Ulster show, apart from his accent gets a lot stronger. Situation. Betty, like that. What's he saying? Betty. And I love listening to you, and I'm great. And Five Live should stick you on a more reasonable hour so you can get some sleep.
That's really sweet of you.
And I mean that.
Continued success, sir.
And also, I love being your agent as well. We just did the deal before the show, and that's why he needs more money.
Thank you, mister. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Good night, Great Britain.